Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
But before we start, actually, I do have a complaint to make, because this is the second time I have chatted to you two and no one has sent me a catsuit.
I still don't have one,
and I'm expecting it any day in the post. Every time you ask me one, I think, yeah, that'll be the postman. Catsuit will be here today.
I'm just showing off my bullet journal.
Last time, Helen said she was going to send me one with Boris's face on the front.
I wasn't myself ill because I was vegan.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast, with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And today, Ellie, we are delighted to have a returning guest. It's one of our favourite women on the entire planet. It's Elle Wright. Hello.
Hello, both. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely. When were you last on, Elle? It must be a few years now.
It was over to beginning of 2019, I want to say. And Helen was a vegan that month.
let me. It's difficult for me to cast my mind back, Elle, on exactly the details of the meeting.
Shall we set the scene?
Yeah, based on my general memories of that time, let me guess that she told you how she felt amazing. She never felt better in her life. It was absolutely the best thing she'd ever done. And then it lasted about 10 more days. Was it something like that?
No, the best thing about it was actually, it was your fault that she broke it that day, Ellie, because she was happily sipping on her cup of tea when you dropped the bombshell that the tea did in fact have cow's milk in it. And she'd been happily recording and telling us all about her journey into veganism for the full 2 hours.
And I derailed that journey. I slashed the tyres on Helen's veganism.
And it was just... Oh, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful moment.
I mean, I enjoyed it.
Oh, Ellie loved it, because do you know what was great? Is that every time we met someone new... I did do January and February to be... Apart from, you know, that little glitch. And that time that we had that... You know, we were at the posh House of Fraser thing and I had to have... A pancetta. Do you remember that, Ellie?
That's right. It was part of the deal we signed.
An emergency pancetta.
Yeah, it's like you cannot come on this press trip unless you eat the pancetta. That's part of the House of Fraser brand. We're trying to promote it at the moment, yeah.
We were with Cat Farmer and we were making like cheese wrapped in prosciutto and I thought, I need that in my mouth.
That sounds like a weird dream, doesn't it? I was with Cat Farmer making cheese wrapped in prosciutto in House of Fraser. You know, when you wake up and you go, how did that happen?
And we slept in a treehouse and then Ellie was sick in the sink.
Yeah, you know. Right, at least I wasn't sick in, I don't know, the bed. I guess that's something, reasons to be cheerful. Was it the House of Fraser one as well, where I wasn't sick in the bath or the sink, but I threw a pillow. It was one of those fancy rooms which had a freestanding bath in the bedroom. And I threw a pillow off my bed into the bath just to get rid of it. And for some reason, there was a little bit of water in the bath. And then the pillow got soaking wet. And I had to go to the reception the next day and go, There's a soaking wet pillow in my room. I just don't want you to be alarmed. It is water. It's not urine or another fluid. It's okay. And I'm very sorry. It will dry, or I'm happy to replace it.
Pay for the pillow.
Yeah, pay for the wet pillow. And in which case, I'll just take the wet pillow with me, because they're not cheap, those pillows.
Oh, the shame.
No. Yes, so it's a shame. Anyway, it's as usual, Helen, we're making it all about us. Should we make it a little bit about the person we're here to interview? Just a little bit.
If we must.
Yes. Welcome back, Elle Wright. For those who haven't heard our previous episode with you, who are you, Elle Wright?
Who are you? So I've written a book. I've written a couple of books now. That's why I'm here. And I started 2016-2017 sharing my story into motherhood on Instagram and via my blog, and that was about losing our son Teddy in 2016, and kind of sort of quickly built up a community of women who were also going through some bad shit, who wanted to talk about it and normalize that conversation. And from there I've kind of openly and honestly shared bits of a secondary infertility journey, which very fortunately and happily ended in the birth of our daughter last summer. So the new book is all about what that journey looked like.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you. So I have a baby exciting. And a book baby. I have both.
Oh,
just show off, why don't you? Honestly.
Yeah.
It's about bloody time, Helen, to have something to be happy about.
Oh, absolutely. No one's going to deny you that. Absolutely. And I, you know, your wonderful book, Ask Me His Name, I remember the phrase benchmark of shit. And I remember us talking about that on the podcast. And Ellie and I still use that phrase, because it's just like, oh my god, and then you're with us all the time. It's like,
oh,
you know, as
that's says, lovely.
Yes.
so when do you mean like when something's really shit you go, oh, that's shit, but it's not as shit as L? Yeah. Am I the benchmark of shit? Is that why I'm with you?
No, it's like, we don't go, you know, oh yes, well that gig was a bit difficult, but it's not as bad as polarizing grief. Yeah, we don't, that's not really.
Why don't I just stick to the script, Ellie? It's when I go off piece, everything goes wrong.
Hey, I wouldn't mind. You wrote the bloody script.
I love it.
You've written a really nice, I think, quite sensitive, you know, running order. And you fucked it in the first 5 minutes.
Then I start free thinking. You know, that's ridiculous.
So... also, like, you put, so you put at the top, Helen, you've got, like, so you've obviously been through, let's say, quite a lot, Elle, and you've had a baby, another baby the last year, and then Helen's written, how is Boris? Yeah, let's start with that. How's your dog?
Okay.
That's what people really want to know.
I did know that this would be a question that would come up for Helen, because I know that she worries about Boris night and day and his welfare. Yes. I don't think there has been a time where I've seen Helen or spoken to her where that hasn't been one of her first questions. So I was expecting it to be slipped in there. So I thought she might be a bit more, you know, wait for a few questions in, but she's just gone straight to the dog.
Straight your dog. How's your beautiful fat pug?
He's wonderful. He's getting used to life as being an exemplary big brother. More often than not, less than exemplary, I'll be honest. He didn't really take to it at first. He was a bit like, what is that? Is it staying? Because, you know, he's had a lot of attention for a lot of the time.
Could have been worse. Could have been, can I eat it? That's always tricky.
Exactly. That's lucky he's a pug. And he did eat some dusty pizza out of the bin bag the other day, which was a low moment. He'll eat anything. It's disgusting. But he loves her now because she sits in a high chair and throws food for him.
Oh.
Yeah. And that is what he lives for.
This question came up just yesterday, Elle, with TV's Claire Balding, who we've just had on the podcast, and I'm interested to see what your answer is. We were talking about another guest we had, Lindsay, who feeds her cat pizza from her mouth, from her own mouth to the cat's mouth.
Wow.
Now, we've asked Balding about this, but I'm not going to tell you her answer yet. I'd like to hear where Elle Wright stands on this matter. Would you feed your animal from your own mouth?
Feeding pets from mouths is a hard no from me. I love Boris, as you both know, like a child, but I draw a line between, I will give him bits of my food at the very end, not while I'm eating, but no, mouth on mouth action with my pug is not somewhere I'm at with my life.
Balding does it with horses, I will tell you. She's been known to put her mouth on a horse's face, which
So what, with a carrot, like a...
Or a polo.
No, a polo, yeah.
That's very close contact. I would have thought a carrot would be safer.
I'm not shaming her. I'm saying what she said on art. It's in the public domain.
And she was very comfortable with sharing that.
It's out there.
Yeah. Can I just interrupt play just for a sec? We forgot to mention who's sponsoring the podcast, Ellie.
Sorry. We should. No, you're right. Well done on the admin. We should do that because they are lovely and they actually make really nice things. Go on, Helen. Who have we got sponsoring us?
I am very excited because my favourite bag company, Meg & B, I'm showing the bag. I mean, it is audio. My favourite bag company, Meg & B, are sponsoring this podcast, and they are two mums called, what did you guess? Guess what they're called? Meg & B. They made a bag company, and they're London-based, and they design it here, and you can choose a coloured bag and then a coloured strap and little tassels and little charms, and they're awesome. And we love them very much, and it's nice that they've sponsored this podcast because we're all big fans of the bags.
And they sent me a lovely bag. I got one with the gold with the stars, and it's marvellous.
Nice. Yes, I went for a black one, so I've got a bigger one now because obviously now I have all my mum shite to cart around with me. I've decided, because I have already got one of their smaller ones that I bought a few years ago, and I love it.
I think you might have even had it on when you came to my house, I think, because I remember going.
I think
to
I did. I also think
I like your bag.
Also think I had it on when I came to the birthday party where Captain Birdseye came. Also,
memories. Oh, yes.
You know, there's those good times when we could all just get together and hug Captain Birdseye.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Very handsy.
Very handsy.
Lovely chat.
Yeah. putting the finger in fish fingers, as we say. But anyway, very nice man. Anyway, bag chat. Yeah, genuinely though, they're lovely bags. They're really nice quality. We've all got one. Elle models hers a lot better than us. But still, you know, they're for all ladies. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I'm not good at this, Helen.
No, I wear mine all the time, and it's often featured on Instagram, and it's a crossbody bag, right? And someone on Instagram said that, what's his name? The podcaster. Oh, I've had a blank. Something and Joe. Who were the famous ones? Radio...
Anton Deck.
No, the other one!
Hale and Pace.
You know, the one who has a really famous podcast, and he was on Radio 6.
Sean Keaveney. Jarvis Crocker.
No, he's a comedian, and they used to have a show, and they're really funny. Anyway, okay, I'll stop that.
This has turned into like a four letters comedian, like, you know what I mean? And there's all the actions, and you're just shouting random names at her.
But not even good clues. Like, you're not like going, he's from Norwich, or, you
know. He looks like David Baddiel, but not David Baddiel. He's from Norwich.
Frank Skinner?
No, the other one. The other comedian who's been around for ages.
Sounds like. He's rhymes
like Max Bygraves. George
with Louis Theroux. Anyway.
Adam Buxton.
Adam and Joe. Right. So Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe said, when you wear a cross-strap bag, the song is by Sade, Boob Separator. Boob Separator.
All of that for that. Yeah. That's what we went for just to get there. That's the final destination, is it? You're not going to go, there's no topper, that's it. Cool. Excellent. Elle, sorry, I know you've done a book club. We'll get to it.
No, this is highbrow stuff, I love it.
Very serious subjects.
Anyway, it's meganb.co.uk.
Oh dear. Sorry, it's always like this, isn't it? It's who we do.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Let's talk about Elle's things. Congratulations on that. So how old's your baby girl now?
She is coming up for 9 months. She is crawling everywhere. She is quite frankly a magnet towards danger. She gravitates towards it like nothing I've ever seen before. And so I spend most of my days running around trying to prevent her from seriously injuring herself.
That sounds
good.
Yeah.
Good times. Good.
It's relaxing all the time, isn't it?
It really is. It's but she's wonderful, and I'm really enjoying her, enjoying getting to be a mum. It's lovely.
Yeah. Mm. And how have you found that the whole lockdown business? Because obviously that's tricksy.
I know. Do you know what? And I said this to I remember saying to my mum, like, when I was first
you know, finally pregnant again last year, and then we bloody went into lockdown the first time, and I just thought, it's fucking typical, isn't it? I wait all this bloody time to do it again, and then that's it. But, oh, by the way, you got to go to the, all the hospital appointments, which you already freak out about on your own. There's a chance your husband might not even come to the birth, like all of this stuff. And I was just like, oh my God, the anxiety was just like mounting and mounting. But yeah, once she was here and we came home, we kind of had like a window from July to September where things were, you remember, we got that like taste of normality and we all got a bit ahead of ourselves and we were like, oh yeah, that's it. It's all over now. Yeah, yeah. We were like, bye Corona, we win. And then... didn't we? And we all thought we were so fly for a bit. And then, yeah, they locked us all up again. So that was really good fun. And then that's
and now
been...
that bit feels like a dream to me. Like, yes. I'm like, were we allowed out for a few months? I don't really remember that. I don't remember things being all right. That's weird.
I know. And I think probably because during that time, most of us were, I know I certainly was, because Olivia was so small and she, you know, we were still in that very much... it takes 3 hours to leave the house or to do anything. So we did so little that actually, you know, when we did do anything, it didn't really feel like we did much. And so in that time, it wasn't like we went wild and then we were all locked up again. So it's I mean, it's been challenging. Like anyone who's had small children or given birth over the last year, you know, it's not how you expect it to be. Being on your own all day with a small baby. And I guess probably I just felt in the first months or I was probably missing out on stuff. And, you know, there are still friends of mine, a couple of my best mates haven't even met her because they live in different parts of the country. And that's probably been the toughest thing, that, you know, we've waited for all that time and then haven't really been able to share in that much with everyone. So that's been... yeah, difficult. But I feel like now we're coming back into hopefully a little bit more freedom. We went to our first baby sensory class last week and that was banging. She was buzzing to be there. I don't know why I had any fears about her being shy or retiring, because she was the class clown and was quite frankly loving it. So, I'm excited to be able to go again. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, I'm sure she's funny because you're very funny, and that's one of the things I love about your books, which are incredibly moving and tragic, let's be honest, but they're really funny and there's really good jokes in them because you're
and I think but you know what, and I think that's been part of my upbringing. That has always been a huge part of how my parents have taught us to carry on and not just ignore it and, you know, get on with it. It's more been, you know, do what you can to get through it, and humour is a huge part. I think if you can't laugh at yourself, then, you know, what's the point?
Was the reaction to the first book kind of what you were expecting?
Better than anything I ever expected. I was really fearful, and I remember saying again to friends and to you guys when we spoke last time, is I was worried that it was too much of a scary subject, and most of us as mums, like, we don't even want to think about that, let alone, you know, the thought of something happening to one of your children is just like, you know, and I, Ellie, I know you've been through it, being in neonatal unit. It's all your worst fears realised, isn't it? And I think I was so incredibly conscious that people would be like, no, this is too much. This is too much. I don't even want to be taken that close to the glass of looking in to even know what that might feel like. And so when the book did as well as it did and as many people read it, it kind of blew my mind. And I felt incredibly lucky that many people wanted to read about what we'd been through as a family.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. And I mean, I know you're so generous in what you share and what you do and in Instagram, but are there times that you've had to step away from social media and providing that? Is that a lot sometimes to take?
Absolutely.
I think
last year was a really good example of that. I really struggled in pregnancy with Olivia because I just, you know, there was not a safe point. There was never a point where, you know, I thought, okay, if I can get past this point, then it's not going to happen again, because, you know, I'd had a healthy pregnancy with Teddy and then he died when he was 3 days old. So there was never a point where I was thinking, okay, then I don't have to worry past that point. It was always, I was almost ramping up towards the end of the pregnancy, thinking, okay, gonna get, that I'm gonna feel worse now. And I did feel worse, and to the point in the last few weeks, it wasn't even a case of me just stepping back from Instagram. I think I just stepped back from life. I couldn't answer WhatsApp from friends. I couldn't, even if I knew they were well-meaning, I felt like there was just this sort of unsurmountable pressure of people wanting to know when the baby was coming, if I was okay, and I wasn't okay. I was an absolute mess. And I think just stepping back from social media was part of that. Because it's very, very difficult when you're really struggling with your own anxiety to be continually reading other people's stories of things that have just happened to them. Yeah. Not that, you know, you think that that will make it be more likely to happen to you. I've been doing this and writing about it long enough to know that it's not catching. But it's just, I think when you're already in that really tough place, it's like the last thing that you need on top of everything. And I just didn't have the emotional capacity for it at all. Mm. I just reached my limit. And I think after Olivia was born, I really realised how much in recent years I had immersed myself in that amazing community, that wonderful world online, but equally how I needed to take a big step back just to let myself and let us as a family just enjoy that time of having her here, which is why I just, yeah, took a break from it totally for 6 months, and it was wonderful, really lovely.
Because it sounds, say if I've got this wrong, but it sounds like you're saying it's kind of like you've almost got this dual pressure. You've got the pressure of like people who've been through the same thing or going through the same thing, and that's an enormous lot of emotional weight for everybody. And then you've got people who haven't, so they can't possibly understand, but they want everything to be all right.
Yeah.
And they kind of want to go, oh, you've got your happy ending now. It's all fine, isn't it? It's all fine.
That's human nature, isn't it? I think we all see something horrendous playing out, and then we kind of want to fix it. We want to fix it for that person, don't we? We want to be like, okay, well, now this has happened, so you're all right now, aren't you? That's going to be okay. But it's a difficult one, I think, particularly with the death of a child, is that even if you go on to have 1 to 10 more children, there's always that one missing. It's never going to be a happy ending as such. And I guess it's just the start of, for us, it's the start of a much happier time, like a new chapter and a new part of life where we're not perpetually caught up in that, you know, bouncing from IVF treatment to loss to this to that, and you can just step off of that for and just enjoy life and stop putting stuff on hold like we had for so many years.
And I know in both books you talk about some of the awful things people have said to you, both after you lost Teddy and also after like going through IVF. And I thought it was great that you also said, you know, actually, here's some practical, here's what you can say. Just saying, I'm here. When people don't pretend to understand what you're going through.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, I know that when somebody says something to me, it's come from the right place, and then they're not trying to be, you know, they're not trying to upset you. No, they're just desperately clambering around to try and say something, anything, like say the right thing and like bolster you, which is lovely, and it comes from such a good place. But I think sometimes, particularly when you're going through something like pregnancy after loss, and it's such a mind fuck, because it's not that you don't want to be happy or excited or have that blissful naivety of a really lovely pregnancy. You desperately want to be like that more than anything, but your mind won't let you go there. So it's not you being negative, you're caught in this, oh my God, every day just carrying it around on your shoulders. And so when somebody says something like, oh, don't worry about it, it'll be fine this time, it feels like it completely sort of undermines all of those really valid emotions that you're struggling so much with. And then you start to feel a bit silly because you think, oh, is that what everyone thinks? Does everyone think that I just need to cheer up, and that just cheering up could help how I feel for the next? But then you think, well, then I'm just pretending. And then surely, you know, like with anything with your mental health, if you just pretend and then actually inside you're not in a good place at all, that's quite dangerous. So I tried really hard throughout the times when, you know, we could see and talk to people, the bit of contact we had during sort of lockdown last year when I was pregnant, I tried really hard to just, when friends did say anything that was a bit not maybe the best thing to say to me in that moment, I would just try to really respectfully say to them, well, actually, I'm really struggling, and it's not that I'm trying to be like this. And actually, I think when you say it to people, they're like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to sound. But yeah, and I think that's important. And with IVF, you know, people just, when you're going through fertility struggles, they're just like, oh, why don't you do IVF? Like you could be having all these investigative things go along, and you could just go, oh yeah, I'll just go rock into the doctors and be like, one for IVF, please. I'm ready. Like, yeah. it doesn't work like that.
Do they expect you to go, Ivy, what? Ivy, what? That sounds amazing. I didn't know you couldn't do. Can you do this? That's amazing. What's the website? I shall sign up immediately.
Yeah.
Like, you've never thought of that. That's not a conversation you're having, or that's not something you know, maybe you have thought about and decided not to do, or, you know, that's, yeah.
And I think that's another thing, is that I guess it's incredibly difficult to understand unless you have been through it, are going through it, or know somebody, you know, you're very close to somebody and you've kind of walked that path with them. It's very difficult to know and understand what that journey looks like, and actually how much is involved before you even get to that point of being eligible for IVF treatment. And then when you get to IVF, what that entails, because it's not just a quick, you know, in you go and, you know, it's over within a week and pop your legs in the air and we'll just put a baby in there and off you shuffle. It takes over months of your life, and not just physically, but emotionally. I mean, the drugs, there was one particular drug that I took that just turned me into an absolute bitch.
I had one of those at university. Yeah, it turned out it's not for me. Sorry, what?
You can get it on the NHS. Honestly,
mine's called Chardonnay.
Honestly, and each time they said, oh, you know, we'll need to put you back on this Bucerolin drug, I was like, no, please don't put me on that. And because you, once you know what that feels like and what it's like to be on a powerful drug like that for weeks on end, you just like, no, I don't want to do that again. But the other part of you is, you have to do this, because if you want to get to where you want to get to, which is having another baby, you've got to do that. And it's just, yeah, so you're on this you're on this permanent sort of merry-go-round that sucks you back in and then sort of spits you back off again. And it's
because you write so beautifully in the book about, you know, you had a few rounds and just so much time and emotional toll on you, and but also on you speak so beautifully about your husband and how supportive he was throughout this, because that must be, you know, obviously you go through hard things, but partners going through that as well, that was really beautiful the way you wrote about that as well.
I think it's tough because when you're the one that's physically going to be the one who, if you achieve pregnancy, it's going to be you carrying the baby. So, you know, husbands, partners, whoever the non-baby carrying person is in that scenario, they have to watch the person that they care for the most going through hell, really, you know, taking all those drugs willingly in the hope that it's going to pay off for both of you. And it is, I think it must be really difficult to watch. And, you know, I think particularly when we did round two and it ended in a really complex miscarriage that went on for weeks and weeks, I mean, I could just see my husband's face every time we went to those scans, and he was just in disbelief but also wanting to help me, but there's nothing you can do other than just be there for each other. So I'm glad you said I was complimentary about him, because I'll remind him of that.
I like that you asked about him second though, Helen. Boris first, and then Nico. That's I'm getting a feeling of the order of things in the house, Elle.
Given my current marital status, Ellie, I am much bigger fan of dogs right now.
Mate, marry a pug, mate. Marry a pug.
Oh, babe. Three ideal. Of them, thanks.
So your second book, as you say, is all about the IVF. Journey, is journey a word we're using? Is journey a bit...
Journey sounds cheesy as fuck, doesn't it? But I do always say it because I feel like there isn't really another way to describe it, because it's like a mission of a journey, to be honest, because you're so... It takes over every... Well, I found it takes over every corner of your life. And even when you're not thinking about it, you're trying to just do, you know, everyday stuff, it's still very present in everything that you do. And I can actually remember that the last podcast we recorded, when I came to your house, I was on Bucerolin, the horrible drug at that time. And I remember even thinking, like, I've got to leave at this time because I need to make sure I can get back and do my injection. Because if I miss my injection, like, it's even if you're doing normal stuff that you need to do, it's still there. It's like, follows you around everywhere.
And what I know that you're such a beacon of, I don't know, hope, and you're so wonderful to your followers and the people who, so who for you were your sort of inspiration, or, you know, who helped you go when you were going through these dark and hard times?
I think there is an incredible community of people online, and I've referenced a lot of them in the back of the book, actually. But listening to podcasts, there's a brilliant podcast by two girls called Gabby and Emma, and they do The Big Fat Negative. I don't know whether you've heard of that podcast. And it is all about getting that negative test result every month and going into fertility treatment. And they talk about all kinds of, you know, all aspects of fertility, whether that turns into donor egg conception through IVF, or things that, you know, I didn't even get to that point. And I think it really, to me, opened my eyes to, even when you feel like you're quite far along in that journey and you're running out of options, there is so much more out there that we don't even know about until we start to scratch the surface. And, you know, knowing that there were women out there having those conversations and creating that community definitely, definitely helped me, because although I was really lucky that my friends were very supportive and tried their best to listen and talk to me and be understanding, it's really tricky unless you've been through it to truly understand what that person's going through. And, you know, stuff like that really helped me, because otherwise it can be incredibly isolating. It can be really lonely, because you feel like the only person, you know, who doesn't seem to have the ability to spawn an offspring, and everyone else around you is just like having more and more babies, and you're like, oh, for God's sake.
Don't you say in the book, your mum says some people make it look like shelling peas.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was very, but I know that's exactly.
So my mum thing to say, yeah. So my mum thing to say, she was like, oh, some people make it look as easy as shelling peas. And it's when you get that visual of all the peas just popping out the pod, it is like, yeah, and she's right. And I had friends who did, they were incredibly fortunate that they were wonderfully fertile and were able to have children, baby upon baby. And I think when you aren't able to do that, you start to feel very stuck and very left behind as well. And so it's good to have those people online who are creating communities and letting women have that conversation and that space to feel like they're not alone.
Yeah. Well, good to have your book, obviously, because your journey, as we are calling it, is incredible read, what you went through. And obviously everybody's experience will be different. You know, I wouldn't pretend for a moment to understand what that's like, what you've gone through. But one thing that I do completely understand, Elle, is your hatred of beetroot juice, which you talk about several times in the book.
Passionately.
The fuck is wrong with people? Helen likes beetroot.
Do you like
Helen.
It?
I adore it. I love beetroot a lot, and I like drinking it. I like eating it. I've got two jars in the go in my fridge currently. I like a very vinegary one. But yeah, I got with the beetroot juice. I really got into it, and dates and prunes. You like
Ellie,
prune though, Ellie.
Do you
like
have the prune. Ability to do a Jackie Weaver here and kick her out? Because
I have the authority.
I just don't know if I can go.
As you say in your book, Elle, it is like licking soil.
It is.
Why don't you just take a bloody spoon out to the garden, dig up the fucking lawn? What's wrong with you?
I will. I absolutely will. And I'll do a nice magenta-coloured shit at the end.
And it's also, beetroot juice wee is alarming. Especially.
Oh. Dude,
especially when you're going through IVF and everyone in the world has had a rummage around down there, and you're like, I'm bleeding! No, I just drank loads of beetroot juice. It's just beetroot wee. That is not a place I want to be in my life.
Mate, no. And that was going to bring me neatly on to our Scummy Mummy Confessions. And I might have told, I hope I haven't told this one on the podcast before, I don't know. But about 3 years ago, Helen took us on a retreat, a health retreat called the Body Camp in Ibiza.
Yeah, I remember watching when you guys were on this and thinking, what are they up to now?
Worst. It was very off brand,
but we had a lovely. They were very good fun. The people who ran it, and we met some great people. But we had a lot of vegan food, which, you know, obviously I'm all for.
Sometimes 10 months of the year, I'm all about that. 80% vegan. That's our next.
80% vegan. Yeah.
So the food wasn't. There weren't enormous portions. So I just ate absolutely everything that was put in front of me, including Elle. I did eat beetroot. I did break the beetroot haters' code, and I ate the beetroot. But I've not really eaten it before. So then later that night in our shared room, I'm like, Helen, I need you to come and look in the toilet. I think I'm having some really bad reaction to all this exercise and healthy eating. She's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, my piss is bright pink. She's like, you fucking moron. You've just eaten some beetroot. So.
And was that the same night that we set the curtains on fire?
No, that was the first night we got there. The first time we got there, we're in this fancy hotel room, and like they give you a lovely scented candle, which obviously we lit with like Helen's lighter. And then I was like, oh, which she bought in case she wanted a fag, obviously, between yoga sessions.
Obviously, health.
And then I was like, oh, electric curtains. And I pressed the electric curtain to pull the blind down, and then suddenly we're like, oh, the curtain's on fire.
This is amazing.
This is why we're not allowed.
Have you ever been invited back to the body care?
No.
Are you banned forever?
I hope so. I hope not. I just want more beetroot and fires. That was excellent. It was excellent. I had some health results yesterday, and apparently I don't have any immunity to anything, and I've got like low vitamin A, B, and whatever. And so they said I've got to improve my gut health. So I just went home and ate an entire jar of sauerkraut, and now my tummy hurts a lot, and I'm doing some great farts. So I'm really glad, in a way, we're not together. Yeah. Because I'm so
me too. Tired. Now I've heard that.
I've done 3 farts since this podcast started. Okay. So yeah, it's really.
Have you tried eating a food that's not pickled? Like fuck your beetroot and your cabbage. Just eat like have a sandwich, mate. Just have a nice ham sandwich or a Findus crispy pancake. Something like that.
Fair enough. Be nice.
I don't think they are recommended for gut health, but. We can but dream.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, look, I feel like I've done my scummy mummy confession. Do either of you have one you would like to share today?
I actually have a question as a mum to a small baby. And I don't know whether it's a confession, but I feel like it's something that I need to just get out there and ask the question. Is it normal to have a fascination with your child's earwax when they're a baby? Is that a thing? Like, you know how our ears are so efficient when we're children? So when my daughter has earwax now, she doesn't just have like a bit of a waxy ear. Since she's been tiny, literally out of nowhere, a whole perfect ball of wax will just appear.
This kind of thing.
Yeah, what is
Helen's
that?
Helen's holding some skittle you're holding up.
Okay, yeah. No, so, I mean, not quite like as big as that, because her ears are tiny. But, and then I'll look at it and I'll think, I've got to get that out. And then I'll get it out and I won't just throw it in the bin. I'll just like have a little look at it and sort of roll it between my, because she's mine, it's the same as doing it with my earwax, isn't it? Not that I would even do that with my own earwax, but I don't know, I just need to know, has anyone else ever done that with our child's earwax, or do I need locking up?
I'm all for that, we used to call them pumpkins. My mum, we said, oh, let's check your ears for pumpkins, and they're like tiny pumpkins. And also what's it called, cradle cap. I used to get quite obsessed with getting that off. That was getting. Did your daughter get any of that? I was quite
no.
Obsessed.
So Olivia didn't get it because she was born with a full head of hair, blonde hair. She looked like Wilfred Johnson when she was born. Like she came, like, and I don't think midwives are used to seeing babies with like a full. Like, they see babies with like thick dark hair, but she came out and it was like blonde hair, and then everyone said to me, "Oh, that's just baby hair. That will fall out. That will fall out." No, it's just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And now to the point where, I mean, her fringe is over her eyes. She's 9 months. I have to clip it up into like a thing. Her neck, her hair here is already down onto her neck going into ringlets. Like, she has an insane amount of hair, like thick blonde hair. And everywhere I have taken her in the time that we've been allowed out, like when we went to this baby group the other day, all the other mums were like, baby's got so much hair. And I was like, yeah, she has. We've got loads of hair accessories at home. So she never got cradle cap because she just had so much hair.
Well, look, all I have
my
to
husband's
say
very jealous.
Yeah. Yes.
Perhaps he could cut some off and fashion a wig or have some implants or something.
Love them, right.
Well, good to know about the hair. I will, you know, all I'm gonna say is, Elle, you sit in judgment of Claire Balding for feeding a horse with her own mouth. And you sit there and tell me you roll your child's earwax between your fingers. How dare you? How dare you? How dare you?
I realise now I've said it out loud to other people that actually, you know, rewinding to how you said, how has lockdown affected you? I think we can all tell what it's done to me, because, yeah, I mean, quite frankly, that's what I've been doing for entertainment.
I don't remember being obsessed with the wax. I do remember Pete especially being completely obsessed with the shit and the colour and the consistency and the, like, he sent me a photograph.
Oh, he was a photo taker. He was a photo.
No. Do you remember, Helen, we had a stranger send us a photo of their child's shit once.
Oh, that's right, because they'd eaten some glitter. But it was this massive photo. I remember opening the email and it was like a glittery shit in a...
It's like a glitter bomb in a nappy.
It was incorrect.
No, and I thought it had googly eyes. I thought it had some googly eyes. Didn't it shit out the googly eyes?
Oh, there's two. There's two then. Yes. Oh, my
Listen,
God.
There's
some people like...
You're listening and you're thinking of sending us a picture of your child's excrement, it's not that we're not grateful to communicate, to receive communications. We're always lovely. I'm lovely to hear from listeners, but... maybe don't need to look at actual shit. Maybe just... No. And it's, if you're not expecting it, Elle, you know, you're having your morning coffee and you open it, it's not right.
It would be quite a tough file attachment to open it, wouldn't it? Particularly, you know, if you're eating something vegan, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe I'm approved. Maybe you should put some photos of this earwax on your Instagram, Elle. See what sort of feedback you get.
Yeah, does anyone else do this? To be fair, the bigger she's getting, it's not as impressive anymore. I think because she's bigger and now the wax doesn't look so big in comparison to her. So, yeah, I'm less fussed on it now, but there was a time when it was much fascination.
Well, there we go. I think we're going to have to leave it there, aren't we, team?
End on that high.
Yes,
end on that glorious note. So your book, Elle, is called...
A Bump in the Road.
A Story of Fertility, Hope and Trying Again, and Beetroot Juice, and there's a little bit of Boris in there for Helen.
Yeah, for good measure.
Lovely stuff. And the podcast was sponsored by Meg and B, who make really properly lovely leather bags with fabulous crossbody... What did you call them? The crossbody straps?
Boob separator!
I didn't think she was going to do it again. She's done it again.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah, so thank you, Megan B, and do go to meganb.co.uk to buy one of their bags, which are worn by Elle. They're also worn by Helen and I, but just let's gloss over that. let's face it, our brand is not aspirational. Excellent, good. What I think is that everything, Helen? Have we got anything else we've got to mention or plug?
No, just to say thank you, Elle, and thank you for writing your book, and we can't wait to touch you in real life.
I know.
Do wash your hands before you shake hands with us, because we don't know where
Now you know.
Yeah. I'm gonna see this baby's hair. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I'll send you a WhatsApp later. You're going to be yes,
please.
Looks like she had a blow dry. It's pretty impressive.
Oh, amazing. I like the idea of having dreadlocks by the time she's two. I think that'd be a look, wouldn't it? Yeah. Oh. Well, it's so lovely to see you, even on the computer,
Thank you,
Elle.
Ladies.
And here's to we can all have a wine together and celebrate your new baby properly. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.
You.
Go to scummymumwomes.com for tickets and shop shit and all that. Until next time, bye-bye!
Bye!
Boob separator!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.